This episode of Football 301, Matt Harmon joins me for some predictions for the 2025 NFL Draft. Mild, medium, spicy. We give varying takes and predictions on the class. And what can unfold? Maybe a trade, maybe a couple trades, maybe a guy falling, maybe a guy rising, all the good stuff. Super fun show. See you guys in a sec. Hello and welcome to Football 301. I'm your host, Nate Tice. Super fun show for you today. We got mild, medium, and spicy takes for the NFL draft. Maybe some predictions for positions, maybe some particular players or teams, but we're just going to get some stuff off our chest. You know, maybe sprinkle in some ideas and thoughts that we have, and maybe some bold takes at the end. Not maybe, for sure some bold takes at the end, and some similar ones too, according to our producer, which we'll find out on the show, to help me do those spicy, medium, and mild takes. My guy, Mr. Matt Harmon, back from, I don't know, the depths of reception perception as you get deeper and deeper into this receiver class. But I'm so glad that you're here to join me for these takes today. How are you doing today, Matt?
Nate, I'm doing well, you know, trying to juggle. I mentioned this to you on our pre-show call that I'm being forced into a family trip this weekend for Easter. So I'm trying to juggle having a few days away from the home office for this while I'm also very much like, guys, don't you know I need to spend every minute possible charting day three receivers that are never going to matter in the NFL. Like that's the most important thing in the world. Right. So that's about where my headspace is right now. So pretty disturbed, all things considered.
At least do you get your taxes in? At least that would be the worst if you just said I got my taxes to do.
we got that handled.
Okay, good. That's good. Hey, you never know when a Puka Nacua shows up. You know, maybe, you know, spring you up and make it all worth it. That's what you have to explain. True. You have to go like, hey, you never know when a Puka happens. And they'll totally know what that means, I'm sure. But like I said, Matt's doing a ton of great stuff on the draft. We've had plenty of shows on prospects. Now we're actually going to focus on maybe what might unfold on draft day or draft nights and days, I should say, as it's a three-day event. Speaking of a multi-night event, Yahoo Sports is doing a live NFL draft show. Yes, me, Matt Harmon, who we're doing the show with right now, Charles McDonald, and others, the whole Yahoo crew, will be reacting to picks round one, rounds two, rounds three. Yes, the first two nights, Thursday night and Friday night, will be live on the Yahoo Sports app, on YouTube, on X/Twitter, and Facebook for all those rounds. So we'll be live, analysis, breakdowns, reactions, all that good stuff. Not only just round one, but rounds of two and three on Friday as well. Plus recap pods after those rounds wrap up, those nights wrap up. It's going to be super fun. We're doing it live from LA in person. It's going to be a super fun show with all of us. We got some live reactions, because other people coming in, giving their analysis as well. Thursday night, Friday night, me, Charles, Matt, others. Going to be a great time. Make sure to tune in. It's going to be a lot of fun. But here we are. Now we're on to today's show. We're going to be doing those mild, medium, and spicy draft predictions. Starting off with the mild sauce, you know, a little pepper, we'll sprinkle it in, just a little kick, if you will. Matt, I'm going to let you bat lead off. What is your first mild prediction for the NFL draft next week?
Yeah, this is a little bit of Cholula, right? It's good on the eggs. It's not really. If you think Cholula is spicy, I mean, we're just working in different brackets here, honestly. But so it's a little bit mild sauce on this one. I think three running backs go in the first round. Okay. I think Ashton Jeanty is definite. I think Amarian Hampton is definite, and maybe it's just been the more I've thought about. I think this is kind of like a Travion Henderson take, honestly. I think the more I've thought about this guy, the more conversations I've had with people, I just feel like he's going to end up sneaking into the top 32 picks. The last two Mock Draft Monday episodes I've done on the fantasy feed have been with Daniel Jeremiah and Jordan Reed, two guys, obviously, everybody knows, super respected. Both of them think, kind of have been gassing me up on this take. Like, I already thought this might be a thing. Like, Henderson just seems like such a desirable player. Like, how many offensive coordinators around the league are going to watch this guy's film and say like, yeah, I don't have a use for this player? Number one, he's explosive. Number two, I think he gives you stuff in the receiving phase. And number three, as I'm sure you've talked about with folks on the show, Nate, not me, hell of a pass blocker too. So, okay, that right there is just going to get him a lot of love from people across the league. And again, with this class being deep at the running back position. And I agree with that take. Like, it is a deep class. I think you can find guys probably on day three that can be impactful players early and then throughout their NFL careers. He is part of my take here that he sneaks into the first round and it becomes three backs in the first round.
I'm all for this. I have a similar take, but before I get to that take, the Henderson hype is, I'm not shocked that coaches and evaluators love him because of the pass protection stuff. But usually when you start with a player's pass protection, it's because there's some slug that's just awful at everything else. No, Henderson's a home run hitter. And so a lot of an old school running back adage, like as far as scouting running backs was, and what my dad actually follows this is, can they catch, can they protect, and can they take it to the house? That was kind of what you wanted out of your running backs. Well, there's Henderson. There's Travion Henderson. My player. Yeah, check. I struggled with where to rank him because I really like him. I mean, I like both of the Ohio State running backs. They're both top 50 players for me, 52, somewhere around there. Is running between the tackles is just the Henderson thing. That's his one, you know, I always think that he's going to have to be part of a split. Which is like, where do you rank that? Because I do think he's a weapon. I do think he can play a lot of tangible snaps, valuable snaps for you, especially on passing downs. It's just that I think he's going to have to get paired with a heavy hitter, which I think everyone's in agreement with. And if a guy, I mean, mm-hmm. Jahmyr Gibbs went top 15 and, you know, Gibbs was maybe a notch higher in every kind of attribute, but that's the same kind of archetype, you know, and Gibbs went top 15. I mean, with 12. But the guy that Henderson actually reminds me a lot of is a former Vikings running back from Ohio State that went pick 21. And that is Robert Smith, not the lead singer of The Cure, but which used to confuse me as a kid when I watched South Park and they had a episode where Robert Smith of The Cure helped defeat Barbara Streisand, I think. And I was like, why is, and I only knew who Robert Smith was. You do? It was like season one or two. And I remember the only Robert Smith I knew was the Vikings, Robert Smith. And I was like, oh, Robert Smith. Mm-hmm. I was like, that's not Robert Smith that I know. And I was like, why is South Park referencing Robert Smith? Anyways, Robert Smith, if you don't know who he was, could pass protect, could take it to the house, had some iffiness between the tackles, but he was 6'1¼". Okay, 6002, 5'10 and change is what Travion Henderson is. 195, Travion Henderson is 202. So you're in the same kind of range there. He had a 39-inch vert, 11-foot broad, 4.47 40. Henderson had a 4.43 40, had a 39-inch vert or 38.5 and a 10.8 broad. So similar type of athletes, similar type of archetype as well. I look at Henderson as more of a day two, early day two guy, round two guy, valid though, and I could see why teams fell in love with him. But my take that's similar to this running back take, though, it is a running back take, is that not only that there might go three in the first round, I think we have the most running backs selected in the first three rounds since the millennium started.
Mm.
That's what I'm going with, which is might be ever. So I looked this up.
Right, crack open the history book here, God. Nate.
So much. And no one does like simple, like eight were drafted this amount. It was like you have to hand crank every single year on several sites. But anyways, I looked this up this morning. Since 2000, the record is 11. In 2008, the most I could find, the mid-90s, they went nuts. And the most I could find was 15 in 1994. There were 28 teams in 1994 in the NFL. There were 15 running backs drafted in the first three rounds. There's 13 in 95. There's 12 in 96. But there's only been double digits twice since the year 2000. That was 10 in 2001 and 11 in 2008. I think at the very least, we see double digits in the first three rounds. I think there are so many running backs and a lot of running backs in the same tier too. So that's going to turn into a flavor thing about which teams value. It was really hard for even me doing a top 75 because I wanted to squeeze in four more packs, like because I haven't ranked similarly, like, you know, somewhere between that 60, 90, 60 to 100 spot. And I'm like, okay, well, I like this guy, but that guy's really close. And it was really hard to parse that. I think teams are going through the same thing. So kind of dovetailing off of your take, which was the most run or three running backs taken in the first round, I think we see the most, at least since 2000, drafted in the first three rounds.
So again, we're getting to like double digits here. Who are the names that you're mad? I mean, obviously Jenty, Hampton, Caleb Johnson, Travion Henderson, Quinshon Judkins. That's five.
Yep. Okay. So you're doing Henderson, Dylan Sampson, mm-hmm. Camp Scataboo.
Yeah.
DJ Giddens. RJ Harvey's got some fans.
He has a lot of fans.
Yeah, I look at him as late third, early fourth. He's kind of on the bottom part of that tier, but he has a lot of fans. I already said Dylan Sampson. Damian Martinez is another one. Devin Neal's a guy I like. I've had some teams reach out and say they see him similarly to me. So that makes me feel a little.
I like Neal and Martinez too. I like both those guys. You guys talk about Martinez too.
Yeah, I really like Martinez. Yeah. I think he's just an easy guy to translate. Ollie Gordon from Oklahoma State is another one. And then there's just other ones that Lane Larrison from UC Davis, Jaden Blue from Texas. I mean, Taj Brooks from Texas Tech, Raheem Sanders from South Carolina, Tootin from Virginia Tech. Like, there's just guys that
for like an outside zone team. There's a lot of,
guys that I consider day three guys, but I've seen people are higher than on those guys. I mean, I'm not knocking them. It's just a deep class. So I think I won't say easily, but pretty easily get to double digits. I think we see 10 drafted in the first three rounds. And that's why I'm saying since 2000, I think we might get that to 11 mark in the first three rounds.
Yeah, it's a good point. And this is the worst off season to be like a veteran running back with like not a lot of security, you know. Go back to the Travion Henderson point, you know, the spot that Jordan Reed had for him in Mock Draft Monday was the Washington Commanders, and which is funny because I participated in a big like group mock or whatever, and I had the Commanders pick, and I actually took Henderson with that pick, so we were in lockstep on this one, and that was pretty interesting that we both came to this. And that's a great example though. They have got two veteran backs that everybody knows, Brian Robinson and Austin Ekeler. Yep. Both those guys are in the last years of their deal. I even look at a team like the Patriots that the previous staff signed Ramondre Stevenson to a big extension. Does Rabel have like a lot of love for Stevenson? We'll find out here in less than 14 days.
Great with Stevenson, even if they were like in a committee for the first year, like they actually pair very well together. But yeah, keep going, sorry.
Totally. So yeah, no, I just mean like any veteran back like that has not a lot of security at the top of the depth chart, like you might have a guy like an RJ Harvey sneak into the third round, and then all of a sudden like he's passing up that big name veteran or something like that.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of, and there's just so many guys to like. Like, it's just, there's speed guys, there's big guys, there's receiving guys, balance guys. Like, and actually, a lot of them can catch and pass protect better than really guys in the past I would grade. Maybe it's just because there's so many that I'm like, oh, yeah, a bunch of them check the box. And I also, you know, a couple guys maybe don't, but it's just a really great class. I'm sure a lot of people following the draft have realized that, but I do think the numbers are going to be there on draft weekend. What is your next mild take? Sprinkle some pepper. Sprinkle some pepper on this take.
this is spicy in a way. It's not spicy, but it's a little hot in a way, just because it's kind of a call your shot here. I don't think the Falcons take an offensive player in this draft. I think they go all defense with every single pick. This is like a weird fixation of mine, is trying to find which team does this, because I think there was a year the Carolina Panthers did it. And for people that don't know, I grew up a Panthers fan, and I couldn't care less about that team one way or another. They're all 32 of the babies are equal in my eye. So whatever. But in terms of the Panthers, they did this one year, and I've just always been so obsessed with it ever since, because it seems like a smart idea in practice. You know, people talk about the Bengals doing this, like they should spend all their draft picks on defense. Well, things happen like pretty quickly in the league, man. You know, you can go like all of a sudden, like you go really fast, and man, things have changed. And well, shoot, I wish we had spent a second round pick on a guard or a third round pick on a developmental tackle or something like that. But I think sometimes teams get very hyper fixated on this. I mean, the Falcons, for a great example, I don't know if this ends up meaning anything, but I just found this out, this jumped up to me a couple of months ago, where the Falcons didn't send any offensive coaches to the combine. Like, they sent only their defensive coaches to the combine, and they only interviewed defensive players at the combine. Like, again, that might not mean that, oh, we are going all defense, but it just sort of solidified that in my mind. And I try to find every year where one team a team that focuses on one side of the ball. And I feel like the Falcons are actually a pretty decent candidate to do it this year, because to their credit, the offense is pretty well set. Like, I mean, they took their quarterback in the first round last year. Their offensive line is, I think, They've got a starter at every position. Again, I think there could be some depth issues down the line, whatever. There always is. You always need more linemen than you think you do. And they obviously have two good starting receivers. I think they could do some depth there, but they have two good starting receivers. I guess Kyle Pitts is still their starting tight end, and they go too deep in the running back room. So, like, theoretically, they are set on the offensive side of the football, and they need major help on defense. So that's why they stood out as a candidate to do this.
No, I like this one. I think they have kind of a mandate. And also, when the head coach is already fired, a defensive play calling head coach is already fired a defensive coordinator, there's not a lot of excuses. So then it's like, okay, well, shoot. Okay, so we need players. And I think they know that mandate. It's like kind of like the Texans for me a little bit is I see, you know, receivers getting mocked there. I originally had some maybe a tight end going there, but it's like, I think they have the mandate this offseason. O-line, 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 O-line. Like that, even if there's other guys there, I think they're just so tunnel visioned on that because of what, you know, there is public pressure. Like there is. And I as much as teams and execs and want to say like, oh, you know, we're going BPA here, best player, and we're doing this, and that's how the board fell to us. It's like, you know, teams know like what they're under pressure, even if sometimes, you know, perception, they think it's not the reality, perception is the reality, you know, and if you don't address that and then you're bad again at certain spots, we give up a bunch of sacks, we don't get a lot of sacks. Well, what did you do this offseason? Well, then that's on coach. You know, if you're saying, oh, yeah, our coaching will make this better and it doesn't get better. Well, you just said our coaching will make this better. Well, who's that on? You know, so I could just see the pressure of all that. The Panthers did this in 2020. Great shout out to the producers for finding this. So great memory there. So were you still a Panthers fan in 2020?
Better memory than me. Hell no. I wasn't a Panthers fan in 2020. Give me a break. But I remember that because they did have – a lot of like late game heartbreaks with the Cam Newton, Ron Rivera era. And plus, like, I started doing this like kind of as a job, and just very quickly, you know, you just can't really be that emotional about it. So there's no like specific thing that broke me or whatever, but, you know, I'm just not a very emotional person about this sort of thing. So I just wasn't cut out. Honestly, I just wasn't cut out for being a fan, if we're being honest. But the added benefit of this prediction is that the Falcons only have 5 freaking picks. So they have a first rounder, a second rounder, no third, they got a fourth, and then they don't pick again until the 7th round. So yeah, maybe they sneak in some 7th round guard or, you know, special teams wide receiver or something. But I feel pretty good that first and second round pick are definitely going on defense, because they're going to, like you said, they're going to need to say like, we added players. Okay. We did something to this. Right. So yeah, I do think that. And then again, you don't pick till the 16th pick of the 4th round. That feels like, again, we're taking another defensive lineman here or something along the way.
It's a project type. Yeah. My favorite kind of draft mandate, you just said, like the all defense draft. I think the Packers, like in the early 2000s, had a few like this, where maybe it wasn't the whole draft, but it was like all of day one and day one used to be rounds 1 through 3 back in the day. So old day one was all defense or something like that. And I love when there's the dominant player in the division, that the other teams are trying to like stop that. So like the Packers was, we have to draft all these corners and DBs to stop Randy Moss. And when my dad was with the Jags, they drafted a couple of defensive players first, Derek Harvey, and I'm blanking on the other guy, a guy from Auburn and a guy from Florida, and two edge players in 2009, I want to say it was, or 2008. Yeah. And that's because
they put, it's going to kill me when I remember who the player is, but. Yeah, right.
They played Peyton Manning, and they're like, well, we have to get after Peyton Manning. And that doesn't matter that he got rid of the ball in 2.5 seconds, so it didn't matter who rushed the passer. but it was like, that was the mandate. Well, you got to get after Peyton. So edge rusher, edge rusher, edge rusher. Okay, and I just always love that when there's the divisional panic about like how to stop the top team.
Quentin Groves,
there it is. Yes. And then Derek Harvey basically had a good national championship game against Ohio State. So this would have been 2008 then. And basically his stock shot through the roof because of that. Always, that's what you do. Always go after that one. All right, I'm going to go with my last mile take, because I was, you know, I don't know, medium. I always defer to medium, I think, when I do this exercise. I always just call everything medium. But mine is Colson Loveland, tight end for Michigan, will be the first tight end drafted in this draft, which isn't that crazy. He's kind of the consensus tight end too. Not kind of, he is. He's either Warren Loveland or Loveland Warren, but I think Warren has become pretty easily the consensus top guy. I think Loveland, and not just because I watched him, but also I just think how the league views these guys, that Loveland ends up being that guy that goes first. Not the craziest prediction, because I think teams see them similar. But, you know, I think that's what my mild prediction. That's why I'm keeping this one mild. Colson Loveland, tight end one. And also, I think that he goes way higher than people realize. I think he might be a top 14-ish guy here. That's Colts pick 14. Yeah, top 14-ish guy here.
Dude, can I just say this on, because I did post this on social media, but I want to say it on the podcast too. The Colts do not need to be taking a first round tight end. This is a very popular mock pick, and I hate it. They don't need another guy. And maybe this is just like pure selfish because I like some of these wide receivers, and like I'll admit my bias before I say it. They got enough dudes they can't get the football to. Like, great. Let's get Anthony Richardson another option out in the route he can't hit. Let's get Danny Dimes, you know, a 4-3 that he's never going to get to. Like, give me a break. They don't need to waste a first round tight end here. The immediate pushback the Colts fans will give you, and I guess I can maybe understand this if I'm being somewhat fair, but I'm not trying to be fair here, is that if these guys don't work out, it's an immediate good spot for our next, like, quarterback or whatever. Again, you got enough dudes that you should be able to activate that you can't activate. You do not need another first round tight end. So I'm with you on the Loveland kind of agenda that you've been pushing lately, which is that I think actually people watch these two guys, and because Tyler Warren is from Penn State and, you know, he's a Big Ten, he's like a tough guy. Oh, he's the more like easy to project traditional tight end, he's a better blocker, whatever. But I actually think when you really just kind of strip away the reputation or whatever and you just watch him play, I actually think like Colson Loveland's probably the more scheme proof, like the more easy just concept to get on the field as a true tight end, whereas Warren, which is why I still think he could end up going higher, is like a specific coaching staff is going to see like a vision for him or something like that.
That's what I wrote about, kind of came to is that I really like Warren. I mean, both of these guys are in the top 15 of my big board. So it's not like, you know, there's a huge difference for even me. It was Warren. It was he's more scheme dependent as far as a blocker and some of the things he can do, which is why that was kind of the tiebreaker, where I think Loveland not only is younger because of that inline ability, it's like, yeah, in the weirdest way, he becomes more, the traditional stuff makes him more scheme proof, like more scheme independent, Loveland, in the weirdest way, while Warren's like more variability actually makes him more specific to teams. I would like Warren, and I compared him, I said the upside of Trey McBride. Some people took that as a freaking knock, and I was like, he's a Pro Bowler and just got paid the highest paid tight end contract in the NFL. That's a huge compliment. And Dallas Clark was the other guy I compared to. These are awesome players. It was just that I think that you have to pair those types of tight ends with either, you have to have another tight end on the roster that can be your true Y. And it sounds like a minor problem to have, but that is actually what usually teams have to figure out. Like, there's a reason the Cardinals drafted Tip Ryman in the third round last year. There's a reason Dallas Clark had Ben Utek. Like, they have these guys that are paired with them to open up their roles. And so that it's just, again, this is just semantics, and it seems like it's splitting hairs, but you kind of have to do these things to kind of really find the big board and figure out where the teams are going to go or match the players with the teams and everything. So all right, that we're going to wrap up our mild takes. We're going to take our first break, and we'll come back with our medium draft predictions. You know, add a couple more pepper flakes on there. We are back with some more draft predictions. Matt, we are on to the medium spice. Which is what I get usually. I can handle hot, but I actually, you know, I just like to, you know, actually like to enjoy it, not totally sweat through my clothes while I eat my food. But what is your first medium spice take or prediction for the draft?
I agree with you on that stance, by the way. I can handle hot, but like, unless I'm Adam Richman competing in like some food competition, who am I trying to impress here? Okay. You know, give me a break. That was classic. Like, you go to B-dubs with your bros in college, be like, oh, get the hottest one possible so that I can completely ruin my night. Give me a break. Anyways, my first medium take is I think a non Travis Hunter defensive back goes off the board before Will Johnson, the cornerback out of Michigan. And I don't think this is a good, I don't necessarily think this is right. And I don't necessarily think that Will Johnson should be falling, but we're recording this today on Monday. He had his pro day and of course he didn't run that 40, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. And everybody had a thought about it after they didn't run that 40. You know what that means? Like I'm a big Jack Besh bro, but I'm sitting here saying like, he didn't run that 40. You know, I know why he didn't run that 40. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? So I think for Will Johnson, this is a bit of a thing here. And I think there are some teams, probably enough, that will hold it against him. Now, the tough part about this prediction is that it also sort of hinges on somebody being really high on Jahdae Barron, who I think is a really good player, probably needs like the right. Probably needs the right scheme and right vision for him. And again, I think I'm counting here on somebody saying we can get the best out of this prototype. Because I do think that like Will Johnson would be a fantastic fit at number 11 with the San Francisco 49ers. I'd be a little surprised they don't want to go with a trench pick just because that's kind of the strength of this draft and that's a big area of need for them. And I just like both these guys, like again, both sides of the ball, they could really use that type of player. But I do think he'd be a great fit there. But if he doesn't go there, you know, I just start looking through the rest of the first round and I could see, you know, a team like Miami maybe preferring Jahdae Barron over a guy like Will Johnson. Colts just signed Charvarius Ward, you know, to a big money deal. Do they want to go with a guy in like Will Johnson? You know, again, I could just see him slipping a little bit to maybe like a very zone heavy team like the 16th overall pick to the Arizona Cardinals. So I just think there's enough like space in between here where someone could sneak up ahead of Will Johnson. Maybe it's even a safety like Nick Emanwari, who, which again, I don't know that I'm not saying that this is what I would do. I just think there's a chance that this happens.
No, the Jahdae Barron kind of narrative or kind of maybe semi-prediction is that's a valid one over Johnson, I should say, is Johnson is an outside corner. And those are hard to find, but he's not a perfect one because of the long speed stuff. Some teams, and even me a little bit, and Charles as well, as we talk about it, like aren't as concerned as maybe it's like because of the film and everything and his body positioning, all that stuff. And I actually went back and watched some more 2023 just to kind of make sure. Still good player, everything. But I think the Barron, you know, being the particular player that might go in front of him is that one, slots are kind of in vogue right now. You know, we need our slot. You know, we need our dynamo from there. So I think that helps.
Who's our Cooper DeJean?
I was just about to say that teams watch the Super Bowl and go, oh, we need a Cooper DeJean. And teams do this. Mm-hmm. And I wish I could say they mm-hmm. don't, but they do. And they think that's what we need. I mean, just look what gets reported all the time when people are like, you know, teams really think they need their version of this. They need their version of this. And it's like, come on, just because it happened last month doesn't mean it's the thing to have. But anyways, Barron also has, he's not a, and I've talked about this on the DB pod about him with Charles, he's not a outside corner slot guy like a Trent McDuffie is. He is a slot mm-hmm. safety hybrid, mm-hmm. like a Brian Branch, which I know that's why people compare him to Brian Branch. I like Branch a little better coming out of college, but I do like Barron. But I have him in the mid-20s on my big board. But obviously teams love him. There's a lot of buzz about him. His tape's fun. He's tough. He tested really well, which he actually had some long speed concerns as well, but then he tested well. So I was like, oh, whew, wave that away. We're good. But no, I like this little prediction just because maybe recent narrative with slot players and Barron being that more than the outside corner stuff, even though outside corners are getting paid. I am going with my first medium take. I do like Will Johnson, though. It's funny, though, that you brought up the 40 stuff because everyone noticed that they didn't run it. Everyone's like, oh, yeah. I think all the scouts that went to it were just like...
Like, and then he ran a shuttle and it actually wasn't that great of a shuttle time either. So
I know. Yeah. Usually if you do that, that means you can do that okay. Like run like a sub-7 shuttle and then everyone is quiet, yeah. You know? So for the 3-cone, I should say. All right. Well, I don't know what order I want to do these, but I'm going to start with this one. Shedeur Sanders, quarterback from Colorado, will not be quarterback 2 of the NFL draft. He will not be the second quarterback selected. And I think, again, so just so people know, just a little peek behind the curtain, all I have is an outline here. So all I have is little hints of what Matt might be talking about. And this one might be related to one that Matt has, but I want to get through first. I think there's some buzz about other quarterbacks. And just smelling the smoke, you know, seeing where the smoke's going, I want to follow that smoke. And also seeing when, you know, Deion Sanders, who was on the show last week with Charles, had an interview with Charles, also says, you know, we're comfortable with him maybe not going at the top of the draft. Again, just reading in between the lines here that I think maybe there is a drop with Shadur and that there's another quarterback that goes above him, because I just think there's just preference there. But thoughts on this or any amendments that you have to this?
Yeah, my medium take, one of them was Jackson Dart goes ahead of Shadur Sanders. And again, yeah, I'm not saying that I agree with this or this is what I would do, but I do think that there's enough. Because here's the thing with quarterbacks, man. It's a personal preference thing. And, you know, we should kind of wind this all together with the fact that the Saints are now in the quarterback market because, let me rephrase that. I think they were already in the quarterback market. I know they were already in the quarterback market, but I think now it's become a big, obvious national talking point because of the Derek Carr shoulder injury and the fact that he might not. He's going to require a potentially season-ending surgery, or like to see he just never plays this year because of this shoulder situation. It's now become rather obvious that the Saints are in the quarterback market. I think, and I had a conversation with our mutual friend Derek Klassen about this on the fantasy show, that I think that Shadur Sanders is actually a really nice fit for Kellen Moore's offense and what he might like as a timing sort of. Very like quick game, heavy passing in the dome sort of situation there with the Saints. But what if Kellen Moore doesn't agree with that opinion? What if the right. Saints front office doesn't agree with that opinion? You know, Jackson Dart gets a lot of comparisons to Jalen Hurts, which I think you kind of have to squint to get to that comparison, but I can sort of see where people okay, maybe not even squint, maybe like put the like the bird watching binoculars on and really zoom in.
I don't have to squint much to that to seem like I'm squinting, but like
yeah, we are two very small eyed fellows, you and I, Nate. So we share
I don't want to speak for you, but
no, well, we share the same situation there. But yeah, we can even get these things even smaller to have to look at the fact that he's got the Jalen Hurts comparison. But obviously, hey, you know, maybe Mickey Loomis goes to Kellen Moore and says, hey, it's pretty fair. Yeah. To Jalen Hurts. You had Jalen Hurts last year. I'm really the guy running the show for what might be the weirdest team in the NFL. We're going to go ahead and take Jackson Dart here, the 9th overall pick. And again, quarterbacks are personal preference, man. Look back to last year, right? Michael Penix was not regarded as a guy that was going to go ahead of J.J. McCarthy in basically any consensus board, basically any, you know, mock draft, whatever. Mm-hmm. One team, the Atlanta Falcons, really liked Michael Penix. So we went ahead of J.J. McCarthy and Bo Nix, which I think Nix and Penix might have been a little bit of a closer competition. But that's just what this is, man. Like, even if 30 of 32 teams like Shadur Sanders and most media people like Shadur Sanders better than Jackson Dart, just takes one.
That's it. I mean, I keep comparing this class to the Kyler Murray class as far as quarterbacks. And Daniel Jones goes top 10. You know, like who was projected to mostly go in the second or third. And that's even for people that liked him. And also you mentioned, you know, just even like, I mean, some of the stuff with the pro day stuff, like you guys see, I tweeted this, but it was Jory Epstein, our coworker here at Yahoo. She noted that the Saints have two coaches at the Colorado pro day, which was the quarterback coach, Scott Tolzien. Hey Scott, go Badgers. And receiver coach, Keith Williams. Okay. Shadur Sanders, Travis Hunter working out. And then there's a picture from Ole Miss's Pro Day, which I will say is a short drive away from New Orleans. So a shortish drive. So I will say this might have been easier. Jackson Dart, though, his Pro Day, Kellen Moore was there, head coach. Doug Nussmeier, offensive coordinator. Also Garrett's dad, a.k.a. Garrett's dad. And Scott Tolzien, quarterback coach that I just mentioned as well. You know, certain. You know, again, just smoke, tea leaves, whatever you want to put. Who went to Michael Penix's pro day in Washington or had a private workout in Washington? That was the Falcons sending their entire staff, I think, last year. Mm-hmm. Again, and that one was hilarious because it got reported and no one picked up on it because we all thought it was like Ndunze, maybe Polk or something, like a receiver in round two. And it was Penix that they were doing that. So again, some of this can just be, this is what they're doing. There may be, and teams are funky. Teams maybe someone will do some smoke screens and stuff, but I don't know, just reading it just kind of seems like it might happen. But that was kind of a co-opt kind of take there. What was your other Medium take that you had for this exercise?
Yeah, my other one is that I think Cleveland trades back into round one for a quarterback. I kind of buy this idea that the Browns could pair up Travis Hunter and Shedeur Sanders. You know, I floated this idea to Charles last week, and he basically was like, "Well, shoot, they got to do something." You know, I mean, they got to do something to fix this. Yeah, you got to sell tickets. It's an owner that really wants to make a splash. You know, they have the 33rd overall pick. So if we start to see a slide for Shedeur, which I do think like the nation as a whole needs to begin to prepare itself that, you know, Sanders might fall. Shoot, like, again, once we get past the Saints at 9,
yeah,
like I don't see a team until we get to Pittsburgh at 21, and Pittsburgh at I kind of fooled around with a prediction that Aaron Rodgers is going to retire in the middle of the draft, you know, and just leave the Steelers kind of bang.
I would have loved that.
But I don't really want to give like more airspace to Aaron Rodgers and like, let's have a Rodgers discussion. But I could just see somehow that like this has gone on a little too long. The Steelers get fed up with it, but he wants to break up with them before, you know, he gets broken up with. So he retires, you know, in the middle of the draft. Anyways, now I'm talking about Rodgers when I said I didn't want to, but like that 21st overall pick for Pittsburgh is probably the next spot. Yep. You know, maybe the Rams at 26.
Yeah.
Yep. I don't know if Shedeur is a great fit in that offense. So I'm kind of skeptical of that, but there are just a lot of spots here where it doesn't become like an obvious fit for him. And that's why I could see a team like Cleveland, or one of these other teams, you know, maybe potentially coming back up into the first round to grab him. That's sort of how I think it's, I don't think he's going to fall out of the first round completely. I get that he's not a perfect quarterback prospect, but I think he's a good enough quarterback prospect to take in the first round and, you know, try to win with him on his rookie deal and then maybe decide like, hey, do we hitch the wagon here? Do we keep him moving? I would be fine if a team traded into the back half of the first round for him. And I kind of think that's going to end up being his draft destination.
I could see the Vikings at pick 24 being a trade back candidate.
They need picks.
You know, trying to get some picks and that there, I mean, that kind of just timing of the draft, that kind of makes sense. It seems always teams are reluctant to be trading up. So that's also curious too, but I don't know. Offensive linemen like kind of run maybe in the teens and 20s will decide a lot. You know, okay, yeah. Say a bunch of this position goes, okay, and then teams like, screw this, I'll trade back. You know, all those tackles just went boom, 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 boom. So I could see maybe a run on certain positions dictating this as well. But no, I like that a lot. I think that's a valid take. It's medium, but I think it's the medium went down well there because I could see that not only just Shedeur or a quarterback, you know, but I do think Shedeur is part of that as well. So yeah, I think that's a great prediction. Oh, that's what you said anyways, but yeah, Shedeur was your example for there. I'm going to move on to, let's go defense because this is kind of a defensive heavy draft. Now I went down the wormhole, the rabbit hole of like, trying to find record numbers and then just get some more valid here. So this one's a little fudged I had to do here. There will be, I'm going to start with this. There will be double digit defensive line and edge players drafted in the first round. Okay. So the take was going to be there will be a record front seven players drafted in the first round, which is also middle linebackers because Jahad Campbell. But kind of hard to look it up and how players' positions are dictated. Football Reference gets a little wonky with the draft stuff before 2010. So it's kind of hard to find like a record. So I just went double digits here. In 2023, there was 10. So this is defensive linemen, edge, guys that are just dignified. What's the word I'm looking for? Their positional label is DN, D-tackle, edge, yada, yada, outside linebacker. So the record I could find was 13 in 2019, which was crazy. It could be 14 if I fudge the numbers even more. 10 in 2023. Also related, notice how many defensive players got paid last year, defensive tackles. And everyone goes, is defensive tackle a premium position? It's like, no, there's 13 drafted in 2019. That's why.
just in the first just round. Where the good players are.
That's where Just follow from 4 years before and you can see who gets paid. Oh man, corners, premium position again? Well, Sauce Gardner and Derek Stingley went top 10. Yeah. But I do think that maybe the take should be there's a dozen front seven players drafted in the first round. Maybe that's the best way I could say this, but it's going to be, there's a lot of defensive players, maybe not the true blue chips we see at the top of a lot of drafts, but there's a lot of good, just a lot of good to very good players. I think everyone's kind of realized that with this draft, not just defensive line and edge, but just overall at a lot of positions. So I think there's going to be a big run on the defensive line, edge, outside linebacker types in this first round of this draft and maybe early round too.
Yeah, one of my mild takes that we didn't get to was that I think there's going to be 9 offensive linemen that go in the top 38. And I just cheated because the 38th overall pick is the Patriots. So I was like, that's a good cutoff spot.
Plus, they're going to get at one of those spots.
yeah. One of those spots is an offensive lineman. Anyways. But I just think that to kind of piggyback off your point there, this is going to be a very trenches heavy draft, not just because there are quality players, which there are at both offensive line and defensive line. I think there's plenty of quality. There's plenty of, like you said, maybe not blue chip, like true elite prospects, whatever, just set it and forget it at left tackle for a freaking decade, or like Myles Garrett types on the defensive side. There's not those guys, but there's a good quality depth and like really just guys that can contribute for a long time on both sides of the ball there. And I just think at some point you're going to be weighing like worse players not even necessarily worse grades or worse players. It's just there's spots of need. There's 5 spots to fill on the offensive line. There's, 4-ish spots to fill on the defensive line, depending on your scheme and everything like that. I just think that's why these positions are going to end up getting pushed up, because you can just add good players to your rotation. Like, there's 4 starting spots on the defensive line. You probably want 6 guys that you can rotate in and out if you've got like a really good unit there. So that's why I just see these trenches just really being like the focus of the first, like I said, 40 picks.
It's one of those things too. It's a position where a lot of teams kind of go, we like a lot of these guys. What's the tiebreaker? All right, trenches. So it's O-line, yeah, D-line, right. That's why even if it's like they're a receiver they like or a corner they like or a back or something like that, they're like, well, we have this guy graded the same. Okay, let's go there. Tied to the trenches. That's kind of how they defer anyways, or they should defer anyways.
They should. I think wide receiver and running back, these positions, like they're going to be good players at the end of the second round and the early part of the third round. There's a lot.
Day 2.
Whereas I don't think you can say that about edge rusher. And I think once I got to that 9th player at the offensive line, which was like probably Dane Jackson. I mean, like really the Ohio State, like, I mean, once we get, Jackson. Once we get to him, like, I think that was kind of the last guy that I was like, I could see him easily being a top 40 pick. Like, I don't see another offensive tackle that like really screams out to me like, okay, we can potentially start this guy as a rookie. Meh. There are people who really like Charles Grant out of William & Mary, but I mean, coming out of friggin' William & Mary, like, an hour plus up the street from me. Like, I don't know. I mean, it might not be ready to rock as a rookie. So that's just why, like, again, once we, but there are guys that are third, maybe fourth rounders at the receiver position and running back that like you can wait on those players. So I just really feel like we're going to get a lot of those players, which is not like a revolutionary take or anything.
No, I like it though, because it was supposed to be a down offensive line class. And I think a lot of people, as they went through it, were like, well, there's a lot of good here. There's a lot, maybe not these guys that are elite, no doubters like last year, but there's still a ton of good. I was kind of just doing a little back of napkin math here. So Mbau, Campbell, Connerly, Simmons, that's 4 tackles. Banks, guard tackle, 5. Donovan Jackson, you brought it up. So that's 6. Zabel is getting a lot of love. You got Tyler Booker from Alabama. You got Ursary from Minnesota is another one that's up there. You brought up, Bill and Mary. I put the over under at 8.5. So like 9 is totally within the realm. Could even get 10 if guys get, the offensive line is going, there's going to be a lot. And from like pick 20 to pick 60, there's going to be a bunch of linemen. Even my top 75, I was like, oh, there's a little more than I even gave credit for. Some interesting day 2 types as well. But actually tying in to what you were talking about with running backs and receivers, though, is kind of my last medium take. And this is, if I can read my notes correctly, there will be more tight ends than receivers drafted in the first round. I think there will be two receivers and three tight ends. Or the other way to put it is there will be more running backs than receivers drafted in the first round, to tie in your take with the three running backs. Either or. Or there will be at least five running backs and tight ends drafted in the first round. Any one of those, however you want to put it. But I think Colson Loveland, Tyler Warren, for sure. And then I think Mason Taylor breaks into the first round. I think teams like him. I think he's easily translatable. I think that type of skill set, too, where that team's drafting. I know the Eagles like him. Pick 32, so might just barely get in there. But I also think receiver-wise, I think McMillan, and then I think Golden, I think just the general consensus as well as teams. Obviously, sometimes you got to look at people that talk to teams, and when they boost up a guy and Golden gets a big boost out of nowhere, it's like, okay, all right, there's some teams that like him. but a guy like Abuka, who I really like, or Burden, you know, who we kind of had mixed reviews on, those guys I think maybe go right away in the second round. And that I could see easily Abuka going in the first round. I could totally see that. There's a couple teams that make a lot of sense. They're picking in the 20s. Mm-hmm. But this is just a number count thing. And just, this is medium predictions. This is just, you know, how to throw a little spice on this one too. So more tight ends than receivers in the first round.
So obviously in this scenario where like Travis Hunter is other, he's not a wide receiver.
He's corner. Thank you. I appreciate that.
I think that's a good thing to. I feel like we got to do this every single time. I've done like a wide receiver superlative show. It's always like, who's got the best hands? Like, well, other than Travis Hunter, Jack Beshkes is everything. Jaden Higgins
catches
everything.
A receiver, so still three over two and a half.
His half of receiver is better than most guys' full receiver, but regardless, at the top of the second round, and I like your point about how that could really be like receiver alley, which, by the way, it kind of was last year too. Keon Coleman, Ladd McConkey, Jalen Polk. One of these things doesn't look like the other. You got at the top of the second round, you got the Browns. If they don't, they're going to go Hunter at the second pick, but still, you've got the Giants, you've got the Titans, the Jags, the Raiders, and the Patriots. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if all four of those picks are potentially these receivers who fell out of the first round. So, yeah, I like that. The Golden thing is interesting just because I think he's a good player. I just don't think he's like head and shoulders above guys. Like, I think he's a tier below Igbuka. I think he's in the same tier as like Burden and Jalen Nolan. Mm-hmm. These guys are just, I think one thing that I was having a conversation with people about this over the weekend. It's just, we just got to realize like when we're looking at Golden, he's not going to be as productive as some of these players. Like I would be not shocked at all if like Buka is just straight up way more productive than him, even if he goes mm-hmm. after him over the course of his career, but he's so tactically valuable and teams really, I think that is it's a team thing. It's not a fan thing, but like when teams look at him and just be like, man, he could stretch out the field for us and open so many things up like that, the teams put a premium on that. Fans do not. It's all just about catches, yards, touchdowns, et cetera.
Yeah, the speed. There's a reason Henry Ruggs was receiver one in that class with Jefferson and CeeDee. It's because teams can, that's what they want to bet on. Even if there's sometimes not proof in the pudding, that's what the teams want to bet on it. Golden ended up my receiver three. He ended up in the top 30, but barely. I think he was 28. And I had Abuka ahead of him. I think my best way I could put it is Abuka is, he's like the definition of what I call the late first, early second grade, you know, picks 20 to 40, however you want to put it, 25 to 45, that range. And he's like the top of that. Like, you know, he's a guy I'm comfortable taking pick 28, pick 26, pick 25, pick 30, because he just makes sense for a lot of places. And I just really like him. I know I'm always a sucker for these inside, outside power slot, can do a little bit of everything well. But man, I don't know. He's got more juice to him than I think people realize. He just does a lot well. So I think we're kind of in unison on him. And Golden, I like. I really do. It's just that, yeah, I think there's just he's a two to me. And that's great. That's cool. Great. That's exactly. But he's a two. Like, you know, and so I'm just trying to slot, you know, or kind of like encapsulate that, especially with the rankings where I think they should go. All right. That's it for the medium takes. We're going to get spicy. We're going to take our last break And then we're going to pour it all out. What is it at Buffalo Wild Wings? Blazing Challenge? We're not sponsored by them, but Blazing, we're going to go.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's stop giving them, our free pub twice. When's the last time you've even eaten at a Buffalo Wild Wings?
Way too recently, within the last month.
Oh, well. Sorry. My food snob came out. I apologize, Nate. You didn't deserve that. The audience didn't deserve that. But the food snob I apologize.
My like diet is a mix of like snooty high end and like slop. Like I kind of go everywhere with what I eat. I'm not above fast food, but I also like my fancy stuff as well. So, you know, B-Dubs is somewhere in there. I know it's more towards the slop. But anyways,
I'm gonna play the fifth. I appreciate it.
But anyways, we're gonna take our last break and then back with the spicy takes. All right, we are back. Time for the spicy predictions. I keep saying takes, but spicy predictions for the 2025 NFL draft. That'll get the SEO going. Matt, what's your first spicy take prediction?
Tyreek Hill trade. I'll give you a spicy take and prediction. Prediction. Ooh. Tyreek Hill is traded sometime during the NFL draft.
Okay.
Number one, that's my prediction. The spicy take is like, wouldn't catch me doing this, baby. I would want no part of the Tyreek Hill business. And I said that the second that the season ended, when, you know, he had his little whatever he was doing in the locker room, you know, quits on the team, and then he's just like,
which is like are you talking about? Because there's been like 40 of them.
fair point. Fair retort. I was specifically speaking about when he just like broke character in the middle of a locker room answer, and just like you could see, like, you know, he had something to say, and he kind of was like juggling back, and he's like, I'm gone, bro. Like, I've enjoyed my time here, but I'm out, you know. And then obviously he's thrown up a peace sign on social media every other week at this point. He's had some run-ins at his house, domestic incidents that didn't become like charged, whatever. Everybody's been up on the news with Tyreek Hill. So yeah, you're right. There's been a lot of things. I think it's just Miami is in a position where I think they do need to weirdly like reset. But are also need to win, which I do think puts them in a tough spot. But I just feel like they need to get control of this locker room generally. And I think they need to, they also badly need to develop, and I feel like this is for the third year in a row I'm saying this, they need to develop like some sort of counterpunch on offense. It felt like at the end of their first year that was apparent. It was very apparent last year. And I think coming into this year, sometimes the best way to develop something, talk about food in the last segment. If you want to lose weight, best thing you can do, don't bring any junk in the house. You need to develop a counterpunch on offense. Yeah. Get the first punch off the team. Okay, like, yeah, you know, it's the tempt. Well, but we could just run that RPO like big over with Tyreek again. We're in a bad spot. Just get it off the team. Then you've right. Like, okay, how can we actually activate Jalen Waddle, who we paid long term money to? We can keep doing the cool Jonnu Smith plays. We can actually maybe develop a serious run game at some point. So I feel like they need to sort of give they need a different vision on offense is number one, and number two, I just think I'd want to get out while the getting is maybe still reasonably decently good for Tyreek Hill. It's just been one thing after another. I think he's a declining player. I think they should ship him off. I think somebody will be desperate enough to take him. But it would not be me if I was making a decision.
It would not be me as well, unless it's like, oh, fourth rounder? Like, you know, we're talking day three pick, you know, like Randy Moss, Raiders to Patriots type, you know, stock drop, you know, when he went for fourth. Oh, and then on top
the only
of it,
team I would do it if I was the Chiefs is the only team I would do it.
Isn't it
is bring him back in so if you're Kansas City? But that's so it. Funny. Other than that, like, no, every single team should pass. But
because if you have a young QB, you don't want that. If you have a young receiver room, you don't want that. Okay, so all right, or we're close to contending. Do we really want to rattle our room because of this personality and stuff? That it's just so much. It's just the juice isn't worth the squeeze, even if he can run. I'm glad you brought up. I don't think his game will age well. So that's a great point as well. It's not that he's fat, like fast is one thing and you can have other skills, and Tyreek Hill actually has some other skills on top of his speed. But the thing is he's smaller. too. So it's like not the greatest combination. The small and fast does not age well. Yeah, but also great point about the Dolphins as well. I think the Jonnu Smith signing and usage last year is going to do more long-term, have more long-term benefits on that Dolphins offense than really anything else they've done. Because it's like, we can do that with the tight end. And actually some explosive plays off of that. All right. Well, now we don't need the intermediate long stuff with Hill because, all right, now we got the short intermediate stuff with Jonnu. And then now we get the speed stuff with Waddle. And now we get more complementary parts. Maybe we do get some size at receiver, you know, as a more of a dirty work guy. So we don't have to RPO everything. I mean, they're the worst short yardage offense than I can ever remember. And that's not just last year. It's ever since this offense has been there, since McDaniel's been there. And that's, it's one of those things. It's like, this is the formula, but it's like, yeah, well, guess what? We're hitting a limit with this formula. And then you got guys like Teron Armstead retiring, who is also like a top personality in the locker room. So like you said, I think it's a reset, revamp, kind of, it's not a rebuild, because like you said, they have to compete and you're also paid your quarterback. You're not rebuilding with a paid quarterback. So I do think that, yeah, I like this prediction. I'd even put a more a medium, because it's just because how many deuces have been put up now, every other week. No, but I like this one. I saw that you had star receivers, so I was curious which one you're going to go with. But I kind of want to see what the Dolphins look like this year. They're one of the more interesting teams. I know we haven't really talked about them too much the last couple months, but they have, how they fill it in between the lines is always interesting. So I wanted to kind of see how they continue to do those moves. All right, well, I'll start with mine. And this kind of, a little deflated because we already kind of talked about it a little bit, but my spicy take is that QB2, the second quarterback drafted, doesn't happen until the second round. There's only one quarterback taken in the first round, and that's Cam Ward at 1-1. And then we go 31 picks without a quarterback. I think it's a lot of bluster and smoke and trade up for this and trade up for that. And then I think then we get to pick 33, and then there's the second quarterback drafted or somewhere in the 30s after night one has concluded. So my spicy prediction is that QB2 does not happen until the second round. QB1 is only, or the first round is just one quarterback, and that is Cam Ward. I don't know. Yeah. It kind of ruins your little trade scenario. That's why I was like, oh. we'll just up it up a little bit more. We're just, you know, just sprinkling a little bit more spice on this.
But I can very well see this happening, you know, because it depends on the overall grades for these right teams and just where they're at. And the one thing that I do get hung up on with Shadur, and I think I kind of think this is an unfair thing for me to feel about him, but like the reason that I would struggle if I was a team that had like let me just use Tua as a super unfair example, since we were just talking about him. Not that I think that they would go Shadur Sanders in the first round. It maybe a little bit of an interesting system fit. Get the ball out quick, be on time, accurate, all that stuff. But it's just a lot to have that guy as like the number two quarterback, you know, at any point. I mean, shoot, even if it's Pittsburgh at 21 and Mason Rudolph starts the season, like, how quickly does Coach Prime bring up Mason Rudolph in a press conference? You know, like I would feel a little weird about that if I was a team, like, unless I had an immediate quarterback vacancy, like a Cleveland, which is why I kind of like the idea of them double dipping with the Colorado guys there. Yeah. Because like, all right, Coach Prime is yapping about Joe Flacco, no problem. We can go ahead and put Shadur in. Like, it's not a big deal. Or we can just start Shadur from day one. And Joe Flacco is a backup to a young quarterback. He just did this last year. He's done it plenty of times throughout the course of the last few seasons. It's not a big deal. So, and he hates it. But we all do things we hate for money. You know, and right? Joe Flacco keeps doing things he hates for money. So that's fine. He'll be all right with it. So I do think this is possible. Just like, they're just like things that stack up against him, which again, some of them are fair. And what I just said is unfair to the player, but I think this is what teams they'll have these conversations.
Yeah. I think I found my Joe Flacco comparison, and I don't know, this might go for your head. It's Kevin Nash, the wrestler, Diesel, because he would just do anything for money and just nonchalantly do all of it. There's gonna be a couple of people that'll like that old late 90s WCW reference there, maybe TNA. They're in the TNA at all. Formerly Diesel, Big Daddy Cool. The Shadur thing, I mean, check out, we did a quarterback preview pod, me and Dane Brugler did from The Athletic, but also just plenty of conversations about Shadur Sanders. I'm sure you've seen him on social. But the thing with him and why how I evaluated him, even if I wrote about him, or when I did write about him, is that, okay, so his upside to me is just, this is how you have to paint the picture of Shadur Sanders, is that his upside is a pristine pocket passer, a distributor, not a creator. It just got to picture point guards, a guy that scores 9 points, gets 12 assists, that type of player, a John Stockton more than a Russell Westbrook. But when I watch him, how his play from the pocket needs work, and not just the pocket movement. I still think he needs to keep growing and progressing from the pocket. There's a couple of plays he's comfortable with, but then there's like any kind of game plan he plays, it was kind of hold on to your hat, see how he reads through this. Also just thought, of course I just mentioned it, but the pocket movement, all the sacks he took, the offensive line wasn't great, but there's still plenty of instances where he could get the ball out quicker, make quicker decisions, save himself a hit. So I still think that needs progress. I think he's a project in that sense, and that's how he's going to have to win. So to me, if you're taking a guy that needs work to get to how he has to win in the NFL, that's day two. And that's almost like an automatic default. that's how I'm going to go to him. Now, then I look at traits, and I think his traits are more adequate and everything. I've kind of gotten a little bit of everything when I've talked to people that have evaluated him with teams. So truly, I have no idea where he's going to go. Like, I really don't. I wish I could have something here. But that's why I just do think that the league is lower on him than we have been as a public, maybe not me in particular, but as a public evaluation of him, that it's, I think there is going to be maybe some preparation for this slide. So that's why maybe, I don't know if it's all the way out of first round, all the way total, but I don't think there's a non-zero chance of it happening too, because maybe that teams think that there is more work to be done than maybe a ready-made starter that Shadur maybe has made out to be. All right. Enough with the Shadur predictions, because that's not like two. We're going to go with your next spicy take, Matt. And I'm excited to hear this one because, I'm just excited to hear this one. Let's hear it.
Yeah, I think some team... Great when you can just say some team. That's how you know you're going to get it right. Some team trades into the top 10 for an offensive playmaker. I just think this has gotten too easy. The mock draft game has gotten a little too easy of late with, all right, Hunter goes to the damn Browns. Ashton Jeanty goes 6 to the Raiders, and we wrap it up and we feel pretty good.
That's the end of that.
I don't know. I don't know. And this comes
right?
back.
It smells.
What it comes back to for me, because I do think the Browns will stick and pick Travis Hunter at 2. This is almost more of an Ashton Jeanty prediction for me than anything, because I think in a class where, you and I and people that do what we do, I think we have all kind of come to the conclusion about this draft class that it's not a bad class. It just that the exciting part of it is, wow, look at the guys on day two. Look at the depth of good players at the tackle class. Look at
he's gonna be a steal at pick 35.
Right. The interesting receivers that could be on day two. Useful. You might find a starting running back in the fourth round or, whatever. Yeah. But everybody still comes to the other conclusion, which is there's a lack of blue chip talent, except one of those guys that is a blue chipper is Ashton Jeanty. That is like, have you talked to anybody that doesn't view him as a top 5 bare minimum player in this class and probably closer to 3 than 5? I haven't. Not a single person. It's
top 5, top 6. Six at the worst is what I've seen.
Exactly. And the reality there is that you're just going to be weighing worse players. Like if you're, here, let's look, we'll get the clip locked in this way. If you're the Cowboys at 12 and you're just like, all right, who's going to be there? Who's going to be there at 12? Who are we picking for at 12? It's going to be, maybe it's Will Johnson. Maybe it's who I do think is actually a fit for Matt Eberflus's own heavy team there. Like, all right, maybe it's Will Johnson at 12. Maybe it's Tet McMillan, who I know you think is probably closer to a blue chip than maybe I like McMillan, but I'm just like, I think he's more of a great,
you're more green chip, quote unquote. Yeah,
sure, exactly. Two prospects for me, but like these are, or like, yeah, they're gonna pick Matthew Golden at 12 or whatever. Like, or we give up a couple picks and get up to that sixth spot with the Raiders, and we just become the team that takes Ashton Jeanty. You know, maybe, again, it could be anybody. I don't know. Or I also think there's a chance that the Panthers are sitting there at eight, and maybe they want to trade down to get more resources. And I think the Panthers are an awesome trade down team in a couple of ways. One, and Joe Person from The Athletic has been talking about this, they are fielding calls to trade down, which one says to me, okay, teams think they need to jump the Saints for a quarterback. Number two, it also says to me that they view this defensive and especially like defensive line class, edge players, all that, they view it as a pretty flat thing. So, okay, yep, we trade down with, just hypothetically, I don't know, you know, the damn, they trade down with the Cowboys, whatever, like at 12, there's no drop off from 8 to 12. I actually think they would even think it's not even that big of a drop off to say, let's get to the 20th pick. Denver Broncos want to come up for Ashton Jeanty or something like that. Yeah, we can get down to 20 and take a guy that is just as good as a defensive player as what we could get at 8. So it just, to me, I feel like there's a lot of avenues for this to happen. And again, I will admit my bias here that I have been openly wish casting Ashton Jeanty to be a Denver Bronco pretty much since about week 15 of the NFL regular season. So I want to see this happen.
We probably
happen.
Have a clip of it at some point, because we definitely talked about this a lot.
We definitely do. We definitely do. I probably have multiple. I feel like there's a way this happens.
Yeah.
Even maybe a Tyler Warren. Shoot. Like, I think he's also, because of what we talked about when we were talking about Warren, he is a specific guy that, like, the right coach can be like, oh man, I could get so much out of this dude. And because of that, some team could sit there and say, okay, well, let's get up to 10 with the Bears, or who don't have that many picks. Like, let's get up to 10, you know, whatever. Like, let's do this thing.
No, I like this. And actually, I sent Stone and Madison, our producers, right before so we didn't spoil these for each other, but they said, Stone texted me back and he goes, you almost have the exact same one verbatim as Matt does. And it was this one right here. And I said, there's going to be a Julio or Mahomes type trade, meaning a team from the 20s goes into the top 10. That was my spicy prediction.
Even better.
So yeah, Mahomes pick, the Chiefs went from 27 to 10. They give him a future first and a third. Check, isn't as crazy as I remember it. And then the Julio trade, the Falcons went from pick 27 to all the way to pick 6. They gave up a future first, their current first, current second, current fourth, and a future fourth. So that was pretty rich. But Julio ended up okay. We're also talking about, you know, Falcons. I was with the Falcons a few years after this, so might have been some depth issues when I was there. Not related. but no, I love kind of like how your theory with it too was that maybe a team loves McMillan and goes, hey, it's McMillan, and then there's giant drop off from him, or offensive line. Maybe there is a team that's smitten with, say, the Patriots go Campbell at 4, and maybe there's a team that goes, well, Mbau is our last guy that we consider a blue chip tackle. Okay, well, now I got to shoot up to get that tackle, as opposed to tweeners. They might view other guys as tweeners. Mm-hmm. Might be a drop off, although Josh Connolly, I'm sure, is going to be up there as well. But you don't know. Like, they're the Saints moved up a few years ago. I can't remember if it was for Penning or Olave. Oh, it was Olave. But the Saints moved up to Olave. Yeah. That was pick 11. It's worked out great for him. But I think there is a little bit of that thinking, is that maybe I love what you're talking about with the Broncos. Like, Peyton's been aggressive in the past. Also, look at that Broncos team right now. Got a good line. Okay, a couple weapons in this draft. The defense is pretty good. Probably going to be a top 10 unit. Pretty easy to bet on. All right, let's push it. Let's get the cherry on top, and let's push it. All right, F them picks. Sean Payton is all about that. Like, so let's do it. So that's one I could see it like totally happening. So I think we're on the kind of the same wavelength here. Maybe a big juicy trade into the top 10. I would love it to see that little new name come up that you're not expecting when we're there on draft night as we're watching, as we're doing the live show.
Just because you said F them picks too, I wouldn't rule out Rams. You know, Tyler Warren, I get that's a spot where I actually think that makes some sense there too, just because they were hot and heavy after Brock Bowers. Everybody knows this. They were hot and heavy after Brock Bowers last year. I can't get out of my head that Sean McVay was like, oh my God, I got to get Tyler Higbee the ball in every different way possible as soon as he was active. And like, it's Tyler Higbee. Yeah, good player. But come on. They've got 2 third rounders this year. They don't have a second because they traded it for Braden Fisk with the Panthers last year. But you know, a future first, a third, something like that. I just, you know, I don't know. Push it. Stafford. With Stafford, you got to push Stafford, it at this point. So.
Yep. And that was last year, was the Brock Bowers thing was, oh, well, yeah, okay, well, oh, he's the tight end, so what's his role going to be? It's the Cooper Kupp role. that's what Brock Bowers would be. And so if you have Warren, totally see Warren. I keep saying Warren is a Shanahan-type tight end to me because of how he blocks, how he put him on the move, kind of create mismatches and everything. Love one of Warren there. Man, that would make a ton of sense. Shanahan guys, which McVay is, want to be 12 personnel teams. They want to. Mm-hmm. That is what they thrive in. And so, okay, we did this 11 personnel thing. All right, let's beef it up a little bit. Totally see that. I love that one. Thanks. You just got me juiced up for it. I'm going to go with, I kind of co-opted that one. So I'll go with my spicy take and then we'll go with your last one. My spicy take, there will be no safeties drafted in the first round. No Malachi Starks. No Nick Amanawori. I like Starks. Think he's a valid pick in the 20s. Understand it, but might not be for everybody. I mean, it just seems like him to be a lot of smoke on the negative end with him. As far as teams, everyone I talk to and not just publicly and with teams, kind of just, I say publicly, media members and with teams, kind of just say that, like, they keep bringing up blemishes. Like, no one's just going like, man, but he does this, this, and this, and this. It's like, no, he misses tackles. No, he's slow. No, I don't see him as perfect fit for there. I don't know how he does it. And it's like, okay, all right, wow. I thought a lot of people would love this guy or, like, really make an argument for him. So just kind of reading that. Also, after doing 500 mock drafts, kind of seeing how some things have broken down and teams that might need a safety, say, like the Dolphins. Wouldn't they much rather have an offensive lineman in the first round, like, you know, add somebody in the trenches? Like, I just think that the teams that maybe could look at safety in the back half of the first round have higher needs on their board, have higher needs with their team on their depth chart. And they figure, oh, okay, we can get the safety in the second round or the third round. Even though if there is a drop off from Starks and Amanawori to the next group of guys, I think maybe teams look at it that way. Just maybe this is harder to fill offensive line, defensive line, what we've talked about earlier in the show, than safety. So zero safeties in the first round. Not that I don't like him, but just seeing how it breaks down in the first round of the mock draft. Any thoughts on this?
No, I mean, especially with Emanuari, to me, like, he's a guy that I think does need the right home, you know, the right little spot. And again, this is the thing when you're on the outside and you're ranking players and stuff, you got to say like, oh yeah, he just holistically fits as the 18th player off my board, but not every team is going to have him that way. You know, it could be a handful of teams maybe have him as the 15th player, but they just don't want to take a safety in the first round. So I can absolutely see this one happening. It feels like every year safety is the hardest position to predict in the draft, just because it's become less like hyper specific. You think about 10 years ago, it's like, okay, we got the free safety, we got the strong safety, we got the Earl Thomas, we got the Cam Chancellor, and everybody's kind of chasing that archetype. Now it's like, how can we blend those worlds as much as possible? And also, how can we maybe turn one of these guys into basically a linebacker? And at that point, do we really want to spend a first round pick on this sort of hybrid, sort of hyper specific player? Maybe not. Let's just punt it off for more of a quote premium position. So I do think because of that, easily could see this happening.
Yeah, the best safeties I watched, you know, this guy was a little bit before my time, but I do remember watching him in college, but before I was like officially evaluating guys, like Earl Thomas, who played a little mostly corner in college too, but he was pick 14. Okay. Derwin James, probably as a professional evaluator, probably the best safety I've ever evaluated as far as what I think he could be athletically, what he could do mismatch wise, all that stuff. 17th. He had medicals, so that might be a little bit of the drop. Kyle Hamilton. Everyone likes, does not run great, but everyone was in agreement. This guy's an amazing football player that can go in a few spots. 14. So even the guys that teams love and are like, oh yeah, this guy is for sure. Oh yeah, he can do this, this, and that. They're not going until the teens, you know, the mid-teens. And that's even teams that needed those safeties and guys that I think were better safety products or prospects. So again, only takes one team, yada, yada, yada. But I just think maybe how this draft ends up breaking down, that's like, okay, we can get him later. We can get him later. We can get him later. We got to get this tackle now. We got to get this guard now. We got to get this defensive tackle now. Yeah. And just how it breaks down that way. All right. Last spicy prediction for the show and for the draft. Matt, take us home. What do you got?
I tried to avoid any like specific wide receiver talk because we just spent 2 hours last week, you and I, talking about this, but I think this one is going to happen. I think Kyle Williams is going to be taken ahead of Luther Burden. This is hyper specific. Okay. And it's kind of a two level prediction. And I'm going to Pepe Silvius this thing a little bit here in a minute, but let me first talk about the Luther. Yeah. Thank you. You're better prepared to do this than I am. Let's talk about the Luther Burden part of it. You know, you and I talked about sort of the negatives of his profile overall from an on-field perspective and an off-field perspective last week. Just a classic guy that I could see slipping. It's going to take the right team and the right, I think, wide receiver coach to say, hey, coach, this is the wide receiver coach talking to the head coach. Coach, yeah, I'm going to be on this guy's ass 24/7. You know, I'm going to make this guy into a great player. I see the flashes, whatever. I'm going to be dialed in on this guy. No problem about it. This is my number one priority, is make Luther Burden great. Okay. That can happen. But again, this is one team. That's one team that's going to end up doing that. I think a lot of teams will just be saying no thank you because of the archetype overall. And again, some of the off-field stuff, just a not for everybody type of guy. That's fine. So I think he's just a classic guy that I think is probably not going in the first round at this point. I think I would take him in the first round just from an on-field perspective. I would take him in the first round. And I would feel pretty good about it because I do think he shows some real deal flashes. I actually think he has like the highest theoretical ceiling of any wide receiver in this class that's not Travis Hunter. I think he has the highest theoretical ceiling, but it is a theory. It is not a reality. So that's the first part of this, is I think he's a guy that could slip out of the first round and maybe slip deeper into the second round, a la A.D. Mitchell last year, who was another guy that, you know, people wondered about just kind of the fit with everybody and the whole deal. And we saw Chris Ballard, his future GM, go to bat for him. But again, that's one GM, not all 32. Mm-hmm. The Kyle Williams part of this is where it's a little bit Pepe Silvia here, because it felt like a couple weeks after the combine, a bunch of media members, and I'm not like calling anybody out or saying this is bad, this is just how the sausage is made, it just was like, you know who's really good?
Yep.
Kyle Williams. You know, and don't we always say this time of year, Nate, that people on the outside are actually catching up to what scouts have been doing all year long in the building, which is watching these guys and sorting them and categorizing mm-hmm. them and ranking them and whatever. That is what that number one, that set that alarm bell off to me. They're like, oh yeah, actually teams are a lot higher than just the media is on this guy. So now the media is playing catch up, right? The second part of this guy has taken 930 visits, nine of them. So far, he has visited with the 49ers, the Bears, the Dolphins, the Jets, the Patriots, the Seahawks, the Texans, and the Titans. Couple of spots here really stand out to me. Titans and Patriots at the top of the second round. Number one, the Titans. He is future number one overall pick, Cam Ward's old teammate at Washington State. I've been saying this for a minute. Take Cam Ward first overall. Go wide receiver at the top of the second round, just like the Bengals did with Joe Burrow and T. Higgins. You could do it by doing that with Kyle Williams. There's how he goes ahead of Luther Burden. How about the Patriots? Patriots go offensive line at the fourth overall pick, top of the second round. Kyle Williams, I think, does stand out, even though he's a smaller guy, stands out from a skills perspective to the guys that they have in the room. I actually think he shares some similarities with Stephon Diggs from an early career perspective, because he's a bit of a playmaker after the catch. That's another thing. Like, okay, maybe I think Jalen Polk can be revived. I wouldn't totally give up on Javon Baker. Neither of those guys are like yak players. DeMario Douglas is not a yak player. Williams is a yak player. And Mike Vrabel has talked about this. Like, you know how you make life easy on the quarterback? You give them guys that can do stuff with the ball in their hands. So again, I just threw out a lot there, a lot of little connections, but I do see Williams going higher than people expect and Burden going lower than people expect.
I snuck Williams into the top 50. I think he was 50 exactly or 49. So I got him in there after Noel, though, because God, I love Jalen Noel. But
where do you have him ranked, like within the position, like wide receiver? I have him 8 for context.
Let me just make sure. I think it's 7. Just
after, so about the same.
If Hunter doesn't count, 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah. Well, 6 if Hunter does not count. Williams. I have him 48 overall. I have him after Noel. I have Burden, Noel, and Williams in the same tier. That's maybe my best way to put it. And then there's a cut drop, like a half drop, and then it's R, it's a bunch of R guys. It's Horton. It's your guy, Jack. It's AO Manor. It's Royals. It's a bunch of those types. It's like the next half tier. I mean, I like a lot of day two receivers, like we talked about. No, I think the Williams hype, it's a discussion I've had with you a little bit. I brought up Neighbors and Dunze is kind of the example of it. But when we did that receiver show, and it's just something even in my receiver evaluations, I try to parse through and try and figure out, is that explosive plays are the name of the game. And we love useful. I love useful and everything. Williams' usefulness isn't maybe the dirty work or anything of that. It's he's got some speed, and he can break a tackle. He can take a 2-yarder 20. He can take the top off the defense. Sometimes the contested catches is all over the place with him, but he wins and he can actually truly beat the guy off the line of scrimmage and take it and stack him and stuff. So just that threat opens up defensive looks because teams might go, oh, well, we got slow-mo over there, a corner. We don't want to go man coverage. All right, we got to go cover two to Williams' side. Otherwise we get burned. You know, that actually does have, that's gravity. Some of the star receivers have that, but even speedy guys, because defenses don't want to get burned. They, especially defenses now, they don't want explosive plays, and that should be the prerogative of every offensive team now is, all right, how do we punch them in the mouth if they're going to give us 5 yards of pop on the ground, and then how do we create 20-plus yards through the air? There is not, it is not a coincidence that all the teams that and we talked about this, but in the playoff preview shows, is it's not a coincidence that all the playoff teams ranked high in the explosive pass rate last year. That is not a coincidence. I think the only team that didn't was the Chiefs. And look what happened there. So it's, and the Chiefs just don't count for a lot of these numbers and everything, but all the teams that won playoff games ranked high in explosive passing plays. It's something that teams have been trying to find, and teams have never been like, oh, I don't want to speed, you know, I don't want speed on my team. But it's not just taking the top off, it's taking a 5 yard or 15, you know, it's creating those plays and creating more yards and creating first downs when it's not designed for that. And I think Williams does that. Like, he just is a walking, talking, explosive play. So this is a guy that I maybe have been lower on in years past. He's 190. Okay. Doesn't do some dirty work stuff. And now I've kind of changed some thinking where I'm like, no, I like this archetype now. And also he tries hard. They're getting blown out by Boise State. And there he is. He's trying to break tackles. And he's trying to take teammates on. And I'm like, okay, you just want to read between the lines on these guys. That's why I think teams like him too. It's like his character stuff is good. And to bring it all home, to Burden, I'm Sylvia Pepe-ing you as you Pepe Sylvia me. Sylvia me is that with Burden is teams want reliability. It's a sliding scale. If you're not reliable, you better be a freak. And then we just hope that we can harness that energy and that talent that you have. But if you're a receiver and we have four guys tiered the same and we don't really like you and you're unreliable and we can't trust you, well, you keep losing tiebreakers until you get to a team that goes, well, we have to take them. You know, kind of the A.D. Mitchell. Like, it's kind of like, oh, well, we have to take them at this point. You know, I think a player that would have faced this was Kadarius Toney, but he got a GM that that made some interesting decisions over his career in
weird.
New
didn't
York.
We, so, didn't, we like, talk, didn't we talk about this general manager making a weird decision at
yes,
a different point?
We
talking quarterbacks? I don't know.
Yes, we did. He had a few of those over the years.
Bring it all the way back around, what broke me as a Panthers fan, maybe like, well, Cam Newton is not an accurate quarterback. He always misses high. Let's get some big-ass receivers. What if they're just bigger than everybody else and also don't get open like anybody else?
No speed to use his arm that could throw 80 yards or anything to open up the offense. Let's maybe soften the offense for all that QB run game. Wouldn't that be a lot easier on yourself? Yeah, I know. It's funny what teams convince themselves. I mean, look at the years of Ryan Grigson in Indianapolis. Look at those draft picks and look at what he kept thinking. Oh, yeah, we need speed. Let's draft 5'9" Philip Dorsett in the first round. Stuff like that. Like, teams think they need. So anyways, receivers is where that position kind of happens more than others because there's so much that's like, well, this is what we need. And that's why receivers is hard to gauge. I'm preaching to the choir here of what you have to do. That's why I love your process on all this. But no, I like this prediction. I wish I had more player-specific ones like this, but I really like this one.
you're funny. You said like this is a guy you maybe underrate in years past. This is usually the type of player I overrate, like the 190 route runner, explosive downfield guy. I know. So I actually tried to stay pretty level on him as wide receiver 8, and like a to me what's a tier 4 prospect, which is priority second rounder. I tried to keep myself a little measured on the Williams stuff, but I do really really like him as a player.
That's funny. I know. It's, oh man. Well, we'll talk about, I got to see how this year's quarterbacks unfold, and then we'll talk about maybe quarterback projections for me. It's like stuff that I overrate and underrate, but no, receivers like that too. And I'm trying to learn because it's, I really like useful guys, but I think true is a guy that can just take any, that's useful enough. Like they don't have to be perfect on everything, but can do things you can't teach. I think that is has to be weighted properly because I think the polish at receiver is so high right now overall. But whew, we're closing it out today. That was fun. Get some takes out there of varying spice levels. We'll be back on Thursday. That'll be me and Charles. We are going to plant some flags on some players, kind of round up some takes, maybe some guys that we get, you know, maybe didn't emphasize enough. Also going to hear from you guys, get some mailbag questions on that show. Yes, finally. But I am Nate Tice. You can find me at Nate_Tice on Twitter and Nate Tice on Blue Sky. Matt, where can they find you? What are you working on? Who did you just write up in Reception Perception? What did you have for dinner last night?
Well, a lot of different questions. What I had for dinner last night was actually I had leftovers because my wife was under the weather. She may have overserved herself on Saturday night, so she was a little under the weather. She's never gonna listen to this, but I shouldn't have called her out like that. My apologies. But hey, yeah,
some people enjoy the Masters different than others.
yeah, that's totally what it was. Big golf gal, my wife, for sure. So I was like, well, cool. I can just eat leftovers and I don't actually have to prepare anything because the standards have been lowered here. But that's what I had for dinner. Who I wrote up for Reception Perception. I spent the morning, worked on a lot of guys this morning. I charted Elijah Badger out of Florida. So that's where I'm at. That's where my life is at this point. So you can follow me @Matt_BYB. Yeah, to see where see what misery I'm up to next from a receiver charting standpoint.
I know. I see always just which ones crop out. I'm like, whew, he's working down a list. he's really in the thick of it right now. We're getting off that consensus top 100 now. We're getting into that guy.
Way off.
Okay. I'm getting the text.
I texted you about Isaac Tesla last week.
I was just gonna say, yeah. And my response was like, hold on, man. I'll catch up on day 3, guys, in a few days.
Yeah. It was a polite shut the hell up. I have work to do.
I didn't say it like that, but yeah, you're right. No, but make sure you check out Matt's stuff. The draft show is going to be a ton of fun, and I'm very excited to see you there. LA is going to be a blast. Those shows are going to be a blast. So again, make sure you guys check that out next week. Check out all the stuff we have leading up to it. We're going to have a mock draft with me, Matt, and Charles next Monday too. And also, if you want to get those mailbag questions in before Thursday, send them in to football301mailbag@yahoosports.com or leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Yes, leave us a review or subscribe to us, follow us, not or, and do all that. Or, and watch us on YouTube on the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel. Thanks to everyone behind the scenes. Thank you to everyone for listening. See you guys next time.